Ready? Yo, this is DJ Quick, kicking it with Chromeo. Y'all keep this funky shit going, man, because, you know, at the end of the day, when we die, we all gonna stank. Funk forever, motherfucker.
I got a bone to pick something I started noticing about you. I get suspicious you switched up all your lipstick for something new.
Welcome to another episode of the American West Ham Podcast. I'm your co-host, Tony, in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. On the other side, we got Brawley in St. Louis. What's up, dude?
What's going on, Tony? How are you?
Well, we got that ass beat 5-0, but I had a blast this weekend. I was up in New York City with the NYC Hammers up at Smithfield, hanging out with my buddies Nick and Dan. I'm on the water right now while we're doing this podcast because we were drinking all weekend, and I'm trying to get myself ready for work tomorrow morning, which will be Monday. Where did you watch the game? Did you watch at home? Did you go out to the bar? Because that was 6:30 for you, right?
Yep, it was a 6:30 a.m. kickoff, so I woke up at 5:10 a.m.
Oh, hell no.
Took a shower and then made the 40-minute drive down to downtown. It's actually not even downtown. It's in an area called Tower Grove South, but it's about a 35-minute drive, 40-minute drive for me. Got there about 10 minutes early. Had a few early drinks to get the juices flowing for the game, and then the game happened. So, but yeah, I had fun. It was a good. I don't know if anyone else saw, but the St. Louis Hammers had a really good turnout.
Yeah,
for,
I saw your retweet.
6:30 a.m.
I saw the retweet that the Supporters Club, the official West Ham United Supporters Club, retweeted you guys. Had a massive crowd for a 6:30 in the morning game, which was really cool that your pub opened that early.
Oh, they open for every single Premier League match. So if there's a Premier League game, it's open. So that's the great thing about the Amsterdam Tavern is literally every single Premier League game they're open for. So it's I've been burned in the past by pubs saying they're going to be open in St. Louis before I heard about the Amsterdam, and then showing up at a 6:30 for a 6:30 a.m. kickoff, and then the doors are locked, and then I can't watch a game. So it is nice, and not a lot of pubs around the U.S. do that. So that's one bonus we have, that our home bar opens for every league game.
And then, mad respect, I just want to give a quick shout-out to all those people, all of our listeners, and all the West Ham fans on the West Coast that were up at 4:30 in the morning for that game.
Yep.
So
yep.
I don't think people sometimes understand, you know, out in Australia and New Zealand, I think they have to get up at weird times too. But at least I can speak for the West Coast. It's a 4:30 kickoff for that lunchtime kickoff in the UK. So not ideal. And we put in all this effort as American fans to get up at early times just to watch us get spanked 5-0 on opening day. But it was so good to have it back, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's just there's nothing better than that opening weekend of fixtures when you've been waiting for the Premier League to come back. This year we didn't have a Euros or a World Cup to get us through the summer like I normally do. So the USL helps. I get to watch St. Louis FC, but man, I'm dying for the Premier League to come back by the time it rolls around. And I tell you what, even though we did get thumped, I'm just glad football's back and that we have something to talk about on a regular basis and then have something to watch every week. Luckily, we're not playing Man City every single week, so we should be okay from here.
Got that game out of the way. You know, I was so excited to have it back, not only because I was up in New York. I try to make that trip at least two or three times a year because as all of our listeners probably are aware by now that I lay in bed and watch because Harrisburg sucks. But I will say that there's nothing better than waking up and checking, looking for the starting lineup again and doing all of your normal Saturday, wishing I was able to put on an accumulator, but I'm in Pennsylvania. Well, Pennsylvania now has a sports book, but I don't participate in those activities. But if you do, Pennsylvania now has it. Anyway, let's talk about the game. Is that cool with you?
Yeah, let's get into it, I guess.
So let's talk about the starting lineups. West Ham started off with Lucas Fabianski back and fit. That was a questionable situation. However,
yeah.
I'm glad we didn't have to see Roberto. No disrespect. Give him a chance. No, I wanted Fabianski in there. Right back, Fredericks, our center back pairing, Balbuena Diop. Left back, Cresswell, which I'm sure we'll get a lot of questions about that later. Midfield, Jack Wilshere, Declan Rice. And then we have Anderson, Lanzini, Antonio, which was a surprise for me, and Allaire. And what jumped out at you right away? Don't talk about the game, but just the initial lineup when you woke up and saw that.
Fabianski, good to see. I know everyone was saying he was going to be fit, but it's just good to see him on the actual team sheet. But you already mentioned it. The Antonio over Fornals start was surprising to me. I think it's a tactical decision probably. But, I mean, I wasn't, like, upset with it. I wasn't – but I thought that maybe that Fornals would get in over Antonio. But outside of that, everything was pretty much as expected. I guess was Masuaku wasn't even on the bench, right?
Correct. Masuaku wasn't even on the bench because I think he tweeted something about it later in the second half or something like that.
It was after five or six drinks, and I did not look at the bench.
Water before drinks, the of game because you were going to work. So
yeah, well, no, I actually got off work, but that's beside the point. I didn't actually go into work. I got off work, but. So I got to have a couple beverages of my choice, and I had a really good day, really, despite the result. But Masuaku, for me, was he injured? Do we know?
I have no idea, and I'm not going to pretend to know. No.
Yeah.
But I know he wasn't in the starting 11, and that's what prompted me to be like, that's my co-host, y'all.
Yeah, it was funny. I was just like, yeah, I'm dumb. I didn't do my research before tweeting, but yeah, it was. I really wanted to see Masuaku because I don't think Creswell's good enough anymore, and I actually don't think Masuaku's good enough to be our left back. That's neither here nor there. But those are my overall thoughts on the lineup. Nothing really stood out to me too much apart from Antonio over Fornals.
Yeah. So one thing you had me wait till we got onto the podcast was I thought Pellegrini got it spot on with. Not before when I saw it, I was like, "Oh wow, Antonio's starting, okay." But I thought Antonio played tremendous in that first half. I thought he had a hell of a game. I think that when Fornals came on in the second half, he seemed to get bullied around a little bit and just didn't seem into it like he did in the preseason. So maybe Pellegrini saw something in training this week or saw that. He wouldn't match up against Man City well, and that's why he started Antonio.
I was surprised he pulled Antonio off for Fornals at halftime. I was expecting to see Fornals at some point, but I thought, like you said, Antonio actually had a pretty good first half. But yeah, it was just it's Man City. I mean, there's not really a whole lot more you can say other than it's Man City, then we just got to move on. But anyway, let's get into the actual game itself.
Okay, so the first goal was Gabriel Jesus. So that came in when Creswell got absolutely toasted by Kyle Walker. I mean, like, there's toasted, and then there's, like, crusty black toasted, and that's what he got. Walker slid it in right across the six-yard box. Fabianski couldn't get there in time, so he sat back. Diop got a touch on it, which kind of helped Gabriel Jesus get a better swing on the ball, and next thing you know, we were down 1-0. Before the goal, though, I thought we played extremely well, and we were pressing them hard. I was shocked when I heard before the podcast that you told me that we didn't even have a single shot on goal that first 25 minutes.
Even attempt a goal.
Even attempt. Okay.
We didn't even have a single attempt. Yeah.
I was sitting there at the bar with Nick and Dan saying, you know, I really thought that we were playing well. I think we're playing well. I think we're doing playing all right. It's City. It's 20 minutes in and we're not losing. You know, I thought I was really shocked to find out that we didn't even have a single attempt on goal. It felt like we had a lot of possession. We're on the ball. Maybe that's because I had low expectations. But to go 1-0 down, I was like, damn, really? Any thoughts on the first goal other than redundancy of Creswell got burnt?
Yeah, I thought you were accurate. I think every West Ham fan would have been happy with the way the first 20 minutes went. We weren't just sitting 11 men behind the ball. We actually were taking it to them at points, and we were pressing them when they had the ball around, passing around their back four, which I thought was huge. Pellegrini, obviously, this isn't going to be the ideal team to start your season, but you can't just sit back, and I don't think he wants to sit back. So what he put out an attacking lineup, and he said, let's go play with them. And the first 20 minutes, I mean, like you said, every 5 minutes I would lean over to my mates and say, well, we're not losing yet. There's 5 minutes. There's 10 minutes. There's 15 minutes. There's 20. Okay, we're still not losing. And then, yeah, right around the 21st minute, Jesus scores that goal. It looked like a Diop own goal at first. I thought Diop put it in the back of the net. But, yeah, it was just disappointing. But it was a great goal. Cresswell just ran past him if he was standing still. Kyle Walker does that to people. I understand that. But Cresswell, I think, needs to be a little more proactive in anticipating that run coming past him. But that's it is what it is, and it was 1-0.
Absolutely. So going into – let's see. It was the first VAR in – okay, yeah. So we went into the half 1-0 down. I think the rest of the half, I don't think we played as well as the first 25 minutes, but I still don't think we played really all that poor. I was very happy to go into halftime 1-0 down.
Yeah, if I want to say – Allaire had that like mini bicycle kick. That was our first attempt at goal, and then it went straight at Ederson, and that was the only thing that really happened for us in the first half. And then going into the second half, that's when kind of everything happened in the game. The second goal was scored by Sterling.
Yep, Raheem Sterling. I wasn't cheering for, but he was in my fantasy side, so I was like, damn.
You know, same.
This kind of sucks, but at the same time.
I was thinking about captaining him because I know Man City always put 4 or 5 past us against us at home. But I have him in my team. I decided to captain Harry Kane over Sergio Aguero. So both of them would have been good choices. But yeah, but the defense just needs to be better. It just has to be better. But again, it's Man City. I mean, we could sit here going back and forth on it, on what we think. But at the end of the day, Man City are going to put that many against a lot of teams this year. And as to that goal specifically, I don't think someone made a specific mistake, but it was a really, really well-taken goal.
Yeah, he just came right through that side. And it's just, here's the thing about the defense. I really don't even think it's that bad. I don't want to sit here and be Mr. Positive like always because we lost 5-0. But at the same time, it's just like this Man City team is absolutely class. I would say that they're probably one of the top 5 in the world, and I just don't know what you're going to do.
I'd put them in the top 3.
They only lost what, 2 games? Four last year.
Yeah, 4. Liverpool only lost 1.
I wrote about it the other day. So it was 4 last year and 2 the year before. So you've only lost 6 games in the Premier League in the last 78 games.
And we lost our first 4 of the last season. Lost as many. As many.
78 times 2. 76. They only lost 6 games in the last 76 games. That's crazy.
Yeah, they're really good.
So
there's not a whole lot more you can say other than that. They're really good. But we do get to get into the lovely topic of VAR with the next goal. It got chalked off. And Sterling was... I believe, I don't have it in front of me, but I think it was 33 millimeters offside, which is, it's like that. That's 33 millimeters. And Jay-Z slides it over for Jesus. It looks like they're 3-0 up. No one on the West Ham team is even arguing for offside. I didn't think it was offside. I don't think anyone in the stadium thought it was offside. And then all of a sudden it goes to a VAR check and the goal gets ruled out, and it was kind of a momentum shifter.
So I want your opinion on VAR, because here's where I want to jump in. So the argument is, or by definition, I believe it's a clear and obvious mistake, correct? Now, it was actually offside, which means it was a mistake, but my argument is that clear and obvious? So do you feel that they should review every single call, or do you think it should be clear and obvious? And then what is actually clear and obvious? Because to me, it was a mistake, but it wasn't clear and obvious. Does that make sense?
Yeah. When I was an advocate for VAR, which I still am, I wanted to change just like you said, the clear and obvious mistakes that were made. To me, the VAR was not brought into the game to get a guy offside for 33 millimeters of his armpit being offside. To me, that's not what it's about. And to me, that goal should have stood. To me, I think you have to correct the obvious decisions the ones that everyone in the stadium is screaming and hollering about, not these ticky-tack ones where, ooh, we might need to look at this, and you get that line drawn down from his armpit down to the ground, and it's just a hair in front. I would have been okay with that goal standing. I don't think it was conclusive enough for me to change it, although it's 33 millimeters, but yeah, go ahead.
So I had a discussion with my buddy Clay, and this is what brought this whole thing up about the clear and obvious. We were proposing the idea of a challenge system.
Yeah.
Where maybe you get one challenge a half, kind of like in the NFL is what, one and a half or two?
You get two in a game.
Two in a game, okay.
But if you win both of them, you get another one.
You get a third. So my argument would be a challenge, you could say X amount per half. It's a challenge system where you wouldn't have used your challenge on a 33 millimeter situation there. Like no. You would have had no idea, and then yeah. That doesn't take away from the referee doing a job. Like it was definitely the wrong decision. He was offsides, but there's no way a referee can see 33 milliliters. I don't know why I keep saying liters, but everybody gets the point. There's no way a referee can see that.
Well. To me, the referee doesn't get that decision wrong. By black and white standards, yes, he got it wrong. But as a linesman, I've been to a few refereeing courses, and linesmen are taught that there needs to be daylight in between the defender and the attacker. If there's daylight, then it's offside. There is not daylight there. There's impossible. No human can see that. I don't care what you say. They'd be guessing if they saw it. It'd be a 50-50 guess. And just to me, that's not what it was brought in for. So I would have been completely okay with that goal standing. But like I said before I went into my rant, it changed the momentum of the game. West Ham fans were celebrating like there was a goal scored. Mm-hmm. I mean, that kept us in the game. And then we go down the other end. Hernandez nearly scores. And then Lanzini or whoever it was followed it up. Lanzini and it was it was an excellent double save from Ederson.
Mm-hmm.
And can you?
Could you imagine what 2-1?
Oh, it would have been mental. But the VAR that swung the game. It could have potentially swung the game on its head at that point.
Yeah, I liked it. I think it was good in our case. However, as you will see, folks, Nigel from More Than Just a Podcast wrote us his second history piece that will be going out later this week. Talks about VAR at the end, and he has some. Interesting opinions there, and Brawley, I can assure you that they were not in VAR's favor.
Mm. Yeah, so the next thing that happened in the game, who scored the third? Off the top of my head, I can't remember.
Raheem Sterling in the 75th minute.
It was another Sterling. Oh, it was the chip.
Yeah.
So that goal looked far more offside than the goal that got chalked off in yep. the naked eye.
From the
everyone.
Angle.
Everyone was calling for offside. Everyone was. And, yeah, it was just typical. Like, I was like, oh, yeah, this one's going to get ruled out. He's definitely offside. And then it stands, and you're, like, just so confused about the whole thing. And, but, yeah, great finish. He chips Fabianski, and it goes in, and then it's 3-0 before you know it. Yeah.
If there's ever a game to test VAR, of course it had to be this game. I mean, it literally had everything. It went from the one that was ruled off, that was 33 millimeters, to the Sterling chip that everybody thought was offsides that stayed a goal, to the next goal that was scored by Manchester City, Sergio Aguero's penalty. So he takes the penalty, but apparently it was encroachment by Rice, correct?
Encroachment, yes.
Yes. So I thought it was going to be for Fabianski being off the line.
That's what everyone thought.
That's what I thought they were looking at.
Yeah.
But apparently Rice was in the box. But I would argue that everybody was in the box.
Yeah. So I was listening to another pod earlier, and it was a guy who was at the game, and he was talking about he was in the director's box. And so the West Ham owners, the Man City ownership hierarchy group was up there. And all of them, every single one of them, thought that they were discussing Fabianski coming off his line.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to get better. We've heard from, I know you've talked to some people, I've talked to some people. the stadium has to be more in the know than what they were. The screens are nice, and the decision coming across the screen is nice, but if you're looking at something, you should be told what you're looking at, and then once the decision is made, you should have an announcement over the loudspeakers about what the decision was, because the owners in the West Ham director's box all thought it was Fabianski coming off his line until after the game they realized that it was for encroachment. So they need to get a little bit better there with the fans in the stadium. Now, for me, not what VAR is about, that encroachment. Yes, by the letter of the law, it's incorrect, but Aguero takes one of the worst penalties in his career. We save it, and we clear it away, and it gets chalked out because Declan Rice goes a quarter of a second too early with about four other people running at the same time. That's not what it's about for me, again, so...
Now it's just nitpicking, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it is.
It should be about the clear and obvious, and or we could do the challenge system. Like that. And I think that's ridiculous. That's not a game changer. Being offsides is a game changer. Being off the line as a goalkeeper, game changer. Did it cross the line with goal line technology? Game changer. Declan Rice in the box. Not a game changer for me.
Yeah. I think us and Man City fans would probably agree that if you reverse the two decisions of VAR, that's really what it should have been, and we would have been happier with that, because you took away the goal celebrations for Man City over 33 millimeters of an offside, and then we get screwed because encroachment a quarter of a second too soon. I think both sets of fans would agree that we would have rather seen both decisions the opposite way, and we would have all been okay with that. So there's going to be teething problems with it. Technically, they got everything correct, which is what the idea is, but I think there needs to be some common sense applied and some a margin for error. But, yeah, I mean, it is what it is now. We better get used to it. It's here to stay. So.
Yep. And then the last goal was Sterling just sliced through that back line again and did a nice little shimmy move, got Fabianski leaned in toward far post and just slides it back near post, 5-0. Game over in the 91st minute. So let's go into overall thoughts. I don't really want to go through the goals anymore. I want to know who was your standout performer and who was your performance to forget?
Sebastian Haller, I thought, had a terrific game.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I don't know that he had more than one attempt at goal, which was like his mini bicycle kick, I thought his link-up play was spectacular. He was chesting the ball down to people, holding it up, and then dishing it off. His 1-2 play was terrific. I thought he was our standout guy, and he was fantastic. Now, as far as ones to forget, I think the obvious one's Aaron Cresswell. I thought he had a nightmare of a game. Kyle Walker and Jesus and De Bruyne and Sterling, they're going to do that to you. I accept that, but I think he just doesn't have the legs for it anymore, and his crossing wasn't even that good in the game as well, so I thought he had one to forget.
The thing about Cresswell for me, and I'm sure we're going to get to it later with the Q&A, is, let's see, he's 29, okay? He's still, it's not old. It's like we're talking about Zabaleta being 35 playing left back. So when we're talking about legs not being in it, then if you're a slower player, then you need to work on your positioning. Like I couldn't believe some of the things that, if you knew you're going to have Sterling, Walker, De Bruyne, Jesus, later in the game, Aguero, if you know you're going to have all this pace, I think that he needed to do better. So I agree with you there. I'm going to go with a different standout performer. As much as I thought Allaire was incredible, that chest pass that kind of was like a lead on, not to somebody, but just led Antonio on the right side, was absolutely incredible. I believe it was Antonio or Fredericks, whoever was on the right side there.
Yeah.
Incredible. My standout performance is Antonio for that first half. Not because he was anything spectacular compared to everything else, but he was so much better than I expected from him that I might even start him next week against Brighton. I thought his pace was incredible. He was strong on the ball. I really liked what I saw from Mikel Antonio. I mean, one time we got on the break, and he was probably one of the furthest back players, and he just muscled right through that entire midfield, just sprinting as hard as he could, and almost got the ball in the attack. So I'd like to see Antonio next week against Brighton as well.
Yeah, I wouldn't argue with that. I think you'll see a couple changes. Again, I don't know what's wrong with Masuaku. Hopefully there's nothing too serious there, but he wasn't even in the squad, so it was tough to again, I still have no idea why, and I haven't researched it at all. But I know Mark Noble was slightly injured, and he should be back for Brighton, hopefully. I think you need Noble in the squad. So, but yeah, that's pretty much sums up the game. I don't think we have to talk a whole lot more about a 5-0 defeat.
No, I guess my only argument about not having Masuaku on the bench is you already have Ogbonna in the center, and you have Zabaleta for an outside back. So I really don't think you want to take up, and you have a goalkeeper. So there's three spots already. I don't think you really want that a fourth, fifth, sixth, or seventh spot to be another outside defender. That would just be my guess there.
Yeah, that's probably fair.
Yeah. Okay, well, yeah, I don't want to talk about 5-0 anymore. I guess, actually, you know what? I lied. One more thing. So I want to talk about Dave Walker's tweet. I believe it was him who said something about, yeah, losing to 5-0 to City is Man City, but also we were at home and you should not get smacked 5-0 regardless of who it is. What are your thoughts on that? And you'll get to see Dave next week and talk about it in person at the American West Ham Way Las Vegas event. What are your thoughts on that tweet? Do you think it's acceptable to lose 5-0 to Man City at home?
Yes. I think it's going to happen to more teams than just us. Is it ideal? Obviously not. You never want to never want to lose by 5 goals.
Of course.
And it is annoying, but you got to keep in mind up until the 75th minute it was 2-0. So
right. Yeah.
I mean, you can't really argue with that. If you told me at the beginning of the game at 75 minutes you're only going to be 2 goals down, I'm probably just about going to take that.
Yeah.
So We're pushing to score. We almost do score. We almost made it 2-1. And then what do you know? They come back the other way. They get a penalty. We save the penalty. And then they have to retake it. And then that's their third. And then heads drop, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But we're still going for it. So in the grand scheme of things, 5-0, I mean, it sucks. Yeah, but I can forgive them for that. I thought they played well. I actually do think they played well.
I think it all depends on whatever happens next week. My prediction for the game was a 3-1 loss. They would score 2. We would get one right after half, make it 2-1. When we're pressing for the equalizer, they would get a third. That was my prediction. And that is almost what happens. We took them 2-0 all the way to the 75th, like you said. We were pushing and pushing and pushing, and I'm glad we didn't stop pushing, but 5 is still rough, so we'll leave that one up in the air for the listeners. We're going to take a quick break, and we are going to do some Q&A and then a quick Brighton preview.
And we're back, and now it's time for my personal favorite part of the show. It's time to take our questions from our followers on Twitter. And the first question we have here is from Minneapolis Hammers, @HammersMPLS. And the question is, do you still have faith in Diop and Balbuena finding their best form together, or do you think we should go back to looking for a top pairing featuring Ogbonna /Cardoso/Reed. So what do you think our center back pairings going forward should be?
I do not want to see a single different center back pairing other than Balbuena and Diop. I do not want to see anybody else paired together at all the rest of the season. Those two together were absolute studs last season. We played against a team that scored over 100 goals 2 years ago. I think, 98 last year, something like that. Just incredible. Man City is one of the most high-powered offenses, and we've got absolutely trashed by them at home the last 4 times.
Every time.
They own the London Stadium. So
what was the stat? Do you remember did you see the stat that was put out there, like the percentage of all the goals scored at the London Stadium? Like Man
yes,
City 20%. Have scored 20% of all of the goals.
No. 20% of opposing goals.
Oh, it's just opposing?
Of goals conceded. Man City have scored 20% of goals conceded by West Ham into London Stadium in the last three seasons and one game, because this is the fourth season now.
Yeah, no, that makes more sense.
So crazy.
It really is.
Yeah, so I will not hold this game. If we concede three goals next week to Brighton, I will be a bit concerned. For the folks listening, we had Brighton put three against Watford this weekend. And yeah, they did. Neil Mumpai, which some people wanted West Ham to sign, he's the dude from Brentford. So he scored as well their last goal of their three. Decore had a, because I was looking for fantasy, Decore had an own goal, and I forget who scored their other one. But yeah, Brighton scored three, so we better be careful next week when they go back home and we're going there. But no, I don't want to see anybody other than Diop and Balbuena. What about you?
Yeah, I think if there's ever a time not to panic after a game, it's when you play Man City. So I don't want to see the defense shaken up because we conceded five against the best team in the world. So yeah. No. Balbuena and Diop, they're going to be my guys going forward. Next in line, Augie, and then hopefully Reed's going to be healthy here soon. Mm-hmm. And then Cardoso, hopefully we get to see in cup games. But yeah, the defense should stay exactly the same, apart from if Masuaku's healthy. I want to see Masuaku for Cresswell.
All right, and going into talking about Masuaku and Cresswell, let's go into what Jeremiah J. Carson underscore 1755, shout out Green Street Hammers. Do you agree with me in starting Masuaku, or are you still on the Cresswell train? Go.
Yeah, I think you know my answer to this already. It's Masuaku over Cresswell for me now. Cresswell just doesn't seem like he's the guy of old, and his legs just don't seem to be the same as what they were. So I think I'd rather see Masuaku attacking, because at least Masuaku is attacking well. Cresswell, I don't even think is attacking well anymore.
I had this conversation with Nick and Dan this weekend, and they did not really agree with me, but I'm going to give everybody this opinion about Masuaku. I think Masuaku is just a bizarre player for West Ham, because I think Masuaku is a better attacker than most left backs in the league, because he says he's not a left back, right? But I don't think he's a very good defender. But when it comes to attacking, because you could say, well, okay, let's play him at left mid, left wing. I don't think he's as good as an attacker in the Premier League. But I think he's a better defending attacker. Does that make any sense? Do you get what I'm saying? So
I think he's
better at defending than most attackers, and he's better at attacking than most defenders, but he's not good in either position.
Like, yeah,
I wouldn't start him in either over somebody in those positions. So I still think we go Masuaku, give that a shot. Cresswell just looked a mess. And if anything, if we're going to be bad defensively, I'd at least like to see what Masuaku has going forward in that left-back role rather than Cresswell just being a mess. Cresswell thought he was a striker this week, and there were some weird positions I saw him in, and then he would get toasted on the way back. I'm just like, ah, come on, brother. Can't be doing all that.
He never gives the ball away. 1, 2, 3, 4, oh, hell. Well, do you remember when we were over? I think that was like the birth of that song was the Stoke game we went to.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool.
Felt like it.
Yeah. The next question we have here is from Wally World, and his Twitter handle is @999WallyWorld. If Masuaku starts next week and the rest of the team stays the same, then who is the captain? So who do you want to see as captain if Cresswell and Noble's not on the team?
If Cresswell and Noble is not on the team, I'm going to have to agree with John, the Las Vegas West Ham United. I'm going to have to agree with John there. I'd like to see Balbuena take the armband. Either that or Diop. Diop was the captain of Toulouse at a very young age. He's a stud back there, even though he didn't really play all that well against Man City, but nor did anybody. Balbuena, the general, older, 28 years old now, I believe, 27 or 28. He's a stud as well. And they both seem to have big personalities, so I'd like to see either Diop or Balbuena be the captain next week.
For me, these are tough questions to answer because we're not in the dressing room.
Right.
We can't see who's the leader.
Or stepping up.
I don't think you could have Balbuena or Diop as captains, in my opinion, because a captain needs to be able to speak the language like perfectly and be able to translate everything you're saying to the referee. I don't know what their language speaking is like. I can't imagine it's that great to where you want to be communicating everything to the referee via them. So that's why you see your Cresswells, your Nobles. If I had to pick a guy, it's going to be Wilshire. He's captain material, and I believe he captained Arsenal for a minute, and he may have even captained England in a game or two. I don't quote me on that. But if I had to pick a guy, given everything, given that he speaks the language, it's probably going to be Jack Wilshire.
That's a great decision. He wasn't even on my radar, to be completely honest with you. That's a great decision because he's old enough where I feel like he probably has that leadership personality in the dressing room. Again, like I would said, we're not on the training ground and we're not sitting there. He probably has the strive to try and get back on the field because he's always injured. So he probably has a big personality. I like that. I think that was a really good decision there. So I also want to go back a half a step. Shout out to Velvet Rebel, who we haven't seen reply before. So a new interaction there. Who said Masuaku and Cresswell are both a liability, but one is a lot more fun going forward. So shout out to that. And thanks again, John, for saying Balbuena. Next question. Denver West Ham, which is our boy Scott Davis. Thank you for all the support, Scott. Shout out to you, man. Brawley, we'll see you in Vegas next week.
Yep.
What is the next logical step for Declan Rice in his development? Shooting or passing?
Oh, gosh. That's a tough question. I think I would like to see him link up the play just a little bit better and be like closer in the 1-2 touch, play it out of the back, and then have Declan be the outlet rather than just the guy that breaks up the play. I think the next step in his game is getting him really comfortable on the ball. Now, don't get me wrong, he is really good on the ball already, but under a lot of pressure, I would like to see him improve just a little bit in being able to quickly play that 1-2, get it out of your feet, and then look and find a pass. A lot like what Jack Wilshere did at Arsenal, and a lot like what I think he'll do this year for us. So for me, shooting, he doesn't need to be doing that. I don't need him shooting. I don't need him that far up the pitch. Although it will be nice if he provides a goal or two, but I think passing is a far more realistic thing for him to start to do better rather than attacking and shooting.
Tony and Broly disagree. I'm definitely going shooting on this. I'd like to see him improve in that department more than passing. I'm very, very content with where he's at in the passing department. I wouldn't say annoyed because it's not his fault, but when you have a corner and it comes right back out to him and he's at the top of the box, maybe 20 yards out, I'm like, oh my God, it had to fall on anybody other than Deckers. You know, Declan Rice is one of my favorite players, but he's not who I want shooting. So if there is something that I'd like him to improve on, like I said, I think his passing is sufficient. He's mainly his defending. I thought this weekend, although we conceded 5 goals, I think he made some big tackles and got stuck in pretty well. So if there's anything I'd like to see him improve on, is definitely going to be the shooting department. So going to have to disagree there.
Next question is from Green Street Hammers. Shout out to them. Which loss was more concerning, this year's 5-0 to City or last year's 4-0 to Liverpool? They say they're not jumping on the negative train, just curious of our opinion. So which one was more concerning to you?
I don't know. I think more concerning would be this year for me. I think last year was Pellegrini's first game. It was Frederick's first game. It was Anderson's first. Like, we had a lot of firsts last season. So I was not concerned with getting smacked around Liverpool 4-0, especially at Anfield, where we have very, very limited success. I guess if I had to pick one, this year's more concerning. Although I'm not concerned, this one is more concerning. 5, even though we were pushing to get an equalizer and keep attacking, 5 is not good enough. So if I had to pick one last year or this year, it would be this year. More concerning, but I'm not worried. I think that we go and beat Brighton.
Neither were concerning to me at all. But if, as you said, if you had to pick one, then it was this year at home. You would like to think you're not going to get beat by 5, and you'd like to think you're going to score 1 on your own ground, and you just don't. So if I had to pick one, it's this year. I think it's a good question, but I'm not concerned by either one, but yeah, gun to my head, I'm picking this year would be more concerning than last season for all the reasons you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, I think it was probably one of the toughest decisions for me so far in all the questions coming through. Because again, like I said, I'm not very concerned. I guess the only other argument there is what led me to the decision would be, when is this going to stop against Man City? Like we talked about 10 minutes ago, that they've trashed us, that every time that we played us against Man City at home, 20% of the goals conceded, blah, 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 all these stats. When is this luck going to change? When are we going to figure out how to only lose by one to Man City?
Well, last season we did at only home. Lose by one. Yeah at home, yes. I agree ground. With you.
I ain't worried about it. That. We got bizarre. That figured out. I'm talking about at the London Stadium.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
All right. Shout out to Papa Darbin. That's Brawley's dad here, RustDar40. What, if any, changes can we expect for the Brighton game?
So if fitness is not an issue and we take all the injuries out of the equation, Masuaku for Cresswell, mm-hmm. and I think for me it's harsh on Antonio, but I'm probably going to play Fornals over him. I like Antonio more when he comes off the bench late in the game so he can run at people. Again, that sucks for him, and that's probably a bit harsh on him, but I bring him Fornals for Antonio. Everything else just about stays the same, though, I think. I wouldn't make a whole lot of changes anywhere else. And then Noble on the bench, hopefully he's healthy.
Yeah, that sucks, because that's literally the only thing I got there, too. The only change that I lied, because I would keep it Antonio. So my only change for next week would be Masuaku in for Cresswell. Other than that, I would keep Antonio and bring Fornals off the bench. It's risky, but I think Antonio did earn himself another start.
The next question we have here is from Nolan, and it's at John_A_Nolan.
That's a new person as well. Thanks for following and giving us a reply.
The question was, did we miss Mark Noble? Pretty simple question.
Yeah, clearly. We know you're about to hit us. I know it. You're about to hit us with some stats about how we play without Mark Noble, but I think we missed that drive. You know, I think it's an underrated thing. Is Mark Noble the best player? Absolutely not. We know that. It's not even worth arguing. But I think it's such a underrated stat, is a player's drive and how much they care about the club and want to be there. Everybody's there to make their money, and so is Mark Noble. If we were like, hey, you know, we're only going to give you $10 a week, he's going to be like, all right, well, I'm going to leave. But I think it's an underrated stat of just that extra pushing and digging into the team and saying, like, yo, let's get this going. So, yeah, I think the team definitely did miss Mark Noble.
Yeah, and I won't hit you with any stats this week, but I will say our odds of winning whenever Mark Noble go out of the team decrease significantly. Did it last season? I don't remember. I think we may have won one game without Mark Noble, and that broke a streak. But it's obvious whenever he doesn't play, we don't win usually. So, also, random tangent while I'm thinking about it, because I see the highlights on my screen here. Shout out to Adrian for making his Liverpool debut. How about that? Coming on 35 minutes. Adrian, and you also got to wonder about Simon Mignolet, whatever his name is.
Mignolet.
He doesn't play for the entire season, and the first game that he leaves, Allison gets injured, and Adrian comes in the 35th minute. So all of you people who were bitching about Adrian going to Liverpool can now shut up, because he may have just played in a title-winning season. Maybe. We don't know yet. Super early days, but he may have played in it, and he's going to play in the Champions League.
Let's hope not.
He's going to play in the Champions League. He's going to play in another competition. So for anyone criticizing him now, looks like an idiot, by the way. So that's all I wanted to say. The next question is here from Dave LaPointe, at Dave_LaPointe. And his question is, does Aaron Cresswell have photos of the manager in compromising starts and captain? That's the only conclusion he can draw. So it's just a little bantery question there, but that's funny.
No, he probably doesn't have anything. I'm going to literally answer the question, no. But I will say that's pretty funny, because there really can't be much explanation if he starts next week after the performance. I mean, the way Kyle Walker just pulled his draws down, there's no way. There's no way he starts next week.
Yeah.
Next question from Stephen Humphrey, because you skipped over one. Think subbing Antonio wasn't the wisest. I think we should be grooming him for an upfront threat. He's a disruptor, whereas the little P is, well, just that. What do you guys think? So did you think Antonio's subbing was a bad move, and do you think Antonio should keep starting?
Yeah, so we're on the same list. Our list must just be different because I was going in order.
Okay.
But, yeah, I said it earlier. I was questioning why Antonio was the one that got sacrificed at halftime. So I agree with Steven there. But I disagree with Hernandez coming off because he's the only one that almost scored a goal for us. Like, literally, that double save, he was the one that had the best chance of scoring. If he probably puts that anywhere else, it's probably a goal. So I disagree. I think Hernandez is a great player to bring off the bench, in my opinion.
His face when he almost scored that was in shock. He was like, yeah. Oh, my days. He looked gutted. Follow-up to Stephen Humphrey's question, because I'm mad because I didn't even realize I'd do this. Stephen says, what's funnier? Dave Walker adding three S's to Las Vegas.
Or Las Vegas.
Las Vegas.
And that's what he says, yeah.
Or Tony trying so hard not to pronounce the H in ham for West Ham. I didn't even know I did it. So, quick story, folks. Andy, one of our good friends, made fun of me when I first came to England, and I said, West Ham. Super American, okay? West Ham, you know? Tottenham. I didn't realize. And, no, I always said Tottenham, but I did say West Ham. And all my friends...
Birmingham.
And everybody made fun of me. So I tried to make a conscious effort not to say the H so hard. And then I thought I was just doing it, and I got used to it. I don't even try. And then all of a sudden, someone says... Steven over here says, well, Tony's trying. Well, I didn't even realize I was trying. So now I got to figure out. Now I'm subconscious. I know it was banter, but I'm worked up.
In your defense, you did live there for a period of time. So it's not like you picked up an accent or anything, but you do pick up some of the things that they say and the way they say it. So, I mean, I don't think that can be blamed on anyone. But, yeah, trying to sound like you're in the East End going to West Ham.
No, I don't start rocking up here with a Cockney accent, talk about apples and pears and stairs and whatever the other Cockney rhyming slang that I don't understand whatsoever.
Bees and honey for money.
Yeah, I could go through the whole list. I think it's fascinating, but no, I didn't realize I was doing that. So thank you, yeah, Stephen, for making me very self-conscious about myself, and I'm going to go in the corner and cry.
I don't heavily pronounce the H, but I just say West Ham. But the annoying thing is when Americans emphasize the West, so it's West Ham. So who are you a fan of? Oh, I support West Ham. Like, you're putting all the emphasis on the West and not on the ham. It sounds very, very American.
Oh, probably the Euro snob.
Another one of my pet peeves is Birmingham. I know I said it earlier, but going to Birmingham, Alabama, and then if we're playing Birmingham, it's like, yeah, we played Birmingham today, and
well, that's because we think of the city Birmingham, Alabama, when they are talking about Birmingham. You know,
yeah, it's funny. It's always going to be Birmingham to me. The Americanisms, the American difference in the language is hilarious, and it's something I always love to talk about. Especially when we're having him from the UK, I know we had a good chat about with Arlo White about the Argy Bargy.
Yeah.
So it's Argy Bargy. So it's funny. Yeah. Just the difference in
the language. Yeah. Well, I was just going to say the last thing about that is it's really funny going over there. It's a great talking point. Also, like just the banter of sounding different. That was my favorite thing about living over there because I mean I'm from the north as people would realize from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, but they're like, why do you say y'all? And I'm like, I don't know. It makes sense, and my family does. So And then I go over to England and nobody says y'all. So I'm like, hey, how y'all doing? They're like, oh, okay, you're not from around here. So I enjoy it. It's fun. It's fun banter. Can you read off the next one?
Okay. The next one that I have here would be from Velvet Rebel that you gave the shout out to earlier. So it's at Velvet Rebel 1984. And the simple question is, what is the long-term plan at left back?
Well, get fucking better. That's what I hope. We just saw a player that I really liked, which I really did not think was ever going to be in our wheelhouse, was Tierney from Celtic. I thought he was a fantastic player that Arsenal just swooped up. I think that's just going to have to be the next investment spot. In that and CM depth, because Noble's going to be another year older. And so I think our next investment, since we just got... now, if Nick's listening to this pod, because this guy's half Balkan, and I can't pronounce Balkan names for my life, the new striker, Ayeti.
It's Ayeti,
Ayeti,
right?
Yeah. Like the cooler, the drink.
Yeah.
Ayeti. Mm-hmm. So we have our backup striker for the future. We have Chicharito, and we have Alair. So I'm comfortable there. We have Lanzini and Fornals in that attacking role. We have plenty of wingers with Grady, Anderson, Antonio Yarmolenko. So I'm feeling great there. So I think our next spot needs to be more center mid cover, like that can sit back, and a left back that's a starter. Then keep Cresswell or Masuaku as a long-term depth piece. And Masuaku just signed that new contract to 2024 anyway. So there's your depth piece. So I think a new starting left back is what is in the cards for West Ham. I don't know who is going to be, but I think that's definitely the long-term plan.
Yeah, and one thing, you mentioned Grady. We didn't announce yet that he got loaned out to West Brom. So my pick for Young Hammer of the Year, I did throw in the whatever you call it, the apostrophe or the asterisk that if he got loaned out, obviously that wouldn't be accurate. Mm-hmm. And he joined Slaven Bilic on a season long loan to West Brom. So, I completely agree with what you said. I don't think I need to elaborate anymore. I think Tierney would have been a great shout, but Arsenal snapped him up, and I think we just need to invest. I think that's the weakest position on the team, in my opinion.
Yeah, definitely.
And close second being right back.
Yeah, right back's going to have to be next too. I mean, unless you consider Ben Johnson. So Zabaleta retires. Fredericks is, and Ben Johnson battle for a starter. I don't know if they're going to be quality yet. But the other thing is, I want to clarify my position on Ben Johnson, because it seems to go back and forth every week and then different conversations off the pod. Ben Johnson could be quality. He's just too young to be quality. So everyone's like, start him. I don't think he's good enough. I'm not saying he can't be good enough one day. I'm just not sure that he's who I want starting every single week. Is that fair?
Yeah, no, I think that's fair.
All right, last question on our queue here is from Drew Pels, and that's at Drew Pels, P-E-L-L-S. Tough match against City, of course. How much of an impact does Alair make? Better, equal to, or worse than Arnautovic?
Better. I think he's going to score more goals than Arnie ever did. And I think he's got at a push be better in the locker room than Arnie was. Mm-hmm. I hope he's not as cancerous. So, but I think he's going to score more than Arnie, and I think he's going to be less drama than Arnie, and that's all you can ask for. So, I think Alair is an upgrade on Arnie.
I think he's going to be better than Arnie. Because not only is he going to score more goals, or at least I sure hope he does, that what I saw his distribution and his hold-up play yesterday, was incredible. Again, I'm going to GIF that chest pass that he did. I about fell out my bar stool. I mean, and if that's only a taste, I thought he had the ball well. He brought the ball down well. I'm on the Alair train, and I'd like to see what he does against a dookie opponent. And we had some shock results last year, so maybe it wasn't against City, but I think we could take some teams by surprise and win some games, and Alair has a great season. The other thing I want to note today, as we're doing this podcast, Chelsea got that ass beat. by Manchester United, and they looked awful. So I really don't see why not that we can't play some of these teams. Spurs looked bad against Villa. And it's opening weekend. We looked bad against City. But I wouldn't even say bad. We just got beat by City. But I really think that we could surprise a few teams, and I'm going to stick by a bond prediction for our prediction league.
Yeah, one thing I want to, a really random side note. Did you notice on the NBC feed now how much they've tried to make it look like Sky? Have you noticed that?
Absolutely. Their graphics look like Sky. Yeah.
Yep. Everything was geared. And I don't think, because a lot of people haven't been over there and they probably haven't watched Sky Sports, but everything is starting to look more like Sky, which mm-hmm. I love. I think they've done a really good job. And I love the partnership between Sky and NBC now, because we get our own transfer deadline day special. So, mm-hmm. And we got 3 hours of Sky's deadline day coverage, which was fascinating because I watched it all day long. It was awesome. And then
Soccer Saturday, you were talking about, and Goals on Sunday.
We get Soccer Saturday and Goals on Sunday. I don't want to hear people bitch about the price of gold. Yes, it went up, but I all day long, it's worth $60 to get all the Premier League shows and the Premier League coverage that you get.
They have a cheaper option. Without all the extra stuff. Yeah, they have a cheaper option without all the extra stuff.
I didn't even know that. I think it's worth it alone for
I would get the more expensive one. Yeah, I do too, because I like the Soccer Saturday. I'm not going to self-incriminate myself. I'll just say I figure out a way how to watch Match of the Day. I'm a big BBC Match of the Day guy. But this Soccer Saturday, I used to watch that at a friend's house before we would go to away games, and I enjoy that program as well. So I think there's a lot of great content.
Speaking of Soccer Saturday, though, I do think a lot of Americans are going to find it bizarre because we have the ability to watch these games, whereas they don't. And on Soccer Saturday, you get these pundits describing what's going on in the game, but you don't get to see what's going on in the game. The cool thing is that they also do the Championship, League One, League Two, and the National League that they're describing for you as well, and they're giving you updates as it happens. But the Premier League games, I think people will find it strange that instead of watching the game, you're watching people talk about the game, which it's kind of a foreign concept to Americans over here, in my opinion. But it's awesome. I'm just really looking forward to getting all the Premier League content I can watch, and I'm just excited that we don't have to play Man City for a while either.
Absolutely. So that was the last question. We're going to take one last quick break, and we are going to talk Brighton predictions and close this out. Finally, we're going to finish up with a Brighton half preview here. Let's see. They are sitting fourth place. Brighton, who I have in 17th, just out of relegation in my prediction league, sitting 3 points, tied for first place. Ha. I guess I want to say one last thing before we get into the Brighton preview. Everybody freaking out. We are 3 points off top of the table, so I'm not too worried. It's 1 week. Brighton's tied for the top. We go down to the Amex. Is a 10 a.m. Eastern kickoff, 3 p.m. Britain. Let's see, that means 9 a.m. for you, and you will be in Vegas, which means
7 a.m.
in Vegas. Yep. I hope everybody's ready for that.
Yep, it'll be good. So you're actually going to the game, correct? When do you fly out?
Yeah, so I fly out Wednesday evening out of JFK. I'm headed over, going to play some cricket with a buddy on Thursday after I arrive and get settled in. We're going to go to the Nets, and then on Friday I'm at Ashes at Lords, so to see England versus Australia in cricket on day 3. Saturday, I'll be taking the train down to Brighton, having a few bevvies, and going to the game. Sunday, day 5, and then Monday, back to work. So it's going to be a quick trip to England for me. You are going on a quick trip to Vegas.
Yep, I fly out Friday morning, early flight to Vegas. And Friday, I believe, I don't know what we're doing exactly during the day, but I know that night, if you're going to Vegas, if you're there Friday night, there's a large group of us going to the Hard Rock, and having some beverages at the Hard Rock. So I believe that's where X and Dave will be, and a few others, Scott Davis and a few other people are going to be there as well. Saturday, obviously, is the game, so we get up bright and early. We go to the event. Jonathan Spector is confirmed as the guest there.
Hopefully future guest of the pod.
Too. Yeah, that would be cool to get him on. And but it should be great. It's going to be a great time. If you haven't gotten a ticket and you're still thinking about it, do it, because it is close to selling out. But I'm just absolutely buzzing for this. I can't wait. It's we're going to have feet on the ground in both relevant areas of the West Ham world, you being at the game and me being at the West Ham Way event. And I think it's just going to be a hell of a weekend for both of us. I can't wait, and I'm just really excited to get it going.
Yeah, absolutely. And just not to bring up old stuff, but shout out to John. We've been talking to John lately, and John Black, and we're all on the same page now. As everybody might have remembered, that we were a little skeptical at first and didn't have some great things to say, but you know, he really clarified a lot of stuff and is been a really good guy for our pod, and hopefully this is a success, and he seems to have done a fantastic job putting this together. So shout out to John there. Changed some minds there.
Yeah, I was. I've told this to him, so this isn't anything new. But I was not the biggest John fan originally, and I told that to him. And but everything that we were skeptical about he's actually pulled off. Mm-hmm. I did not think that. Firstly, I didn't think X and Dave would actually come over, and then I didn't think they would be able to get X players there. I didn't think they'd be able to get a venue that easily, and everything that I was critical of.
They fucking did it. So
yeah, the only thing that I really had the biggest issue with was that no other cities were even put in contention. But hindsight now, I don't think anyone else could have pulled this off the way he's done it at this point. And so, John, I know I've said it to his face, but I apologize for the way I talked about you in the past. But I am. We are now fully on board. And I just can't wait to get this Vegas event rolling. It's going to be a hell of a time. And I get to see what the beautiful ex-WHU employee looks like. So I think out of everything that I'm most looking forward to, it's being able to see X's face for the first time ever.
Yeah, I'm a bit jealous of that. And also, there's going to be so many amazing raffle things, so I might have to have you bid on a few things for me, because I also owe you a third kit as well, folks. Yes. So I will be getting that for Brawley this weekend. So I guess the last thing I want to do is, I know we won't be keeping track of the table in a little prediction league, but I just want to know what your quick thoughts on Brighton, and then we'll get everybody out of here.
So for score prediction, I actually, if you're going based off history, we usually lose this fixture. I believe, and again, I'm sorry I don't have it pulled up in front of me, the last two times since Brighton have been in the Premier League, we've lost to them both times at Brighton. Am I wrong in saying that?
It's 12:30 in the morning. I'll give that one to you.
Yeah, here. Hang on. I got it right here. Head to head. The last time we played Brighton was a 2-2 draw, but that was at home. At Brighton, we lost 1-0 last season. Mm-hmm. And then the season before that, we lost 3-1 to Brighton. So I am correct in saying, when we go to the Amex, we usually lose. So that scares me, but it's a new leaf. It's a new West Ham team. I'm going to predict a 2-0 West Ham victory. Clean sheet, cleany for the first time at Brighton, and we walk out of there with 3 points. You're happy leaving the stadium. I'm happy drinking all day at Blondie Sports Bar and Grill in Las Vegas.
I predicted 3-1 loss against City. I'm going to predict 3-1 win against Brighton. I think we pounce. I think we come back and are angry. I think Pellegrini digs in. I think Mark Noble limps onto the field at the training ground and digs into them and gives them that presence. I think that they come back rearing, ready to go, and we beat Brighton 3-1 and get back on track to start the season.
Yeah. I just hope we don't lose.
So, back to my key phrase, that's enough for me. Brawley, can you hit them with the stuff on the way out, since I always fuck it up? Go ahead.
Yeah, follow us on Twitter, at WestHamPodUSA. If you want to send us an email, send it to AmericanWestHamPod@gmail.com. Please, guys, go check out our website, www.AmericanWestHamPodcast@gmail.com. Tony has written an article. Nigel has written an article. Nick has written an article. Am I missing anyone else?
Nope, that's correct.
So it's really good content, and so just go check it out and help us boost those stats on the website.
Yep, it's blog style, folks. So it's mainly opinions and stuff. If you're looking for like actual analysis, it's not your place. If you're looking for entertainment, Nigel does a fantastic history piece. Like I said, it's going to be going his second quote unquote episode or whatever you want to call it will be going out later this week. I will be doing more match previews and stuff like that. So it's definitely more attempting to entertain people.
Yep, and then please go give us 5-star reviews on iTunes. If you do that, that helps us become more viewable in the charts. And when you Google or when you search in our podcast, it pops up faster. And it's always good to get more 5-star reviews. Outside of that, I believe that's it for the week. Tony, have fun in Brighton. Have fun in London. I'm sure I'm going to have a good time in Vegas. And then we will be doing a podcast, hopefully, Sunday. Will you have time on Sunday to do one?
Yep, absolutely. Still planning on doing a podcast.
Okay, so I will be, I believe X and Dave are doing their podcast on Sunday. And we'll be joining them on their show. And then hopefully we'll get to do our show, and then it'll be a great time, and then we're discussing 3 points. So that's it from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Tony Clark signing off. Me from St. Louis, Missouri. I'm signing off, and we will talk to you next week. See you guys.
Now this is more than a hobby, give them more like I'm Bobby. This is my team and they got me, shout out to Billy, we're bonding. We got us 3 cups, mate, I know it ain't too late. We'll turn that 3 into 4 and turn that 4 into 8. So come on you Irons, it's time. Throw on your claret and blue and listen up to this rhyme. 112 years, wow, iconic bowling ground at London Stadium now. Blowing bubbles from the crowd, let the Premier League know. The Irons going for the gold, scoring 100 plus goals like Paolo Di Canio. So kick it off at the homies, known as Brawley and Tony, and keep on blowing those bubbles until they bring us a trophy. I'm forever blowing bubbles, and my fortune's always hiding. It's the American West Ham Podcast, y'all best dialing. I'm forever blowing bubbles, I'm forever blowing bubbles, I'm forever blowing bubbles, I'm forever blowing bubbles, and I'm forever blowing bubbles, and my fortune's always hiding. It's the American West Ham Podcast, y'all best dialing. I'm forever blowing bubbles, I'm forever blowing bubbles, I'm forever blowing bubbles, I'm forever blowing bubbles, hey. I believe it, I know that we're winning. I've been here since the very beginning. Yeah. Dreaming of the gold medal, we're lifting, set it up like we're penalty kicking. 57,000 people packed, hear the fans shout from the back. Take the ball and then we all attack. Make opponents feel the hammer crack. Wild nights, highlight stats, Tony got you covered on that. Brawley got the stories and the facts, together everything is down packed. 3-time gold winners, but now it's time to get another cup. West Ham fans stand up, West Ham fans stand up. I'm forever blowing bubbles, and my fortune's always hiding. It's the American West Ham Podcast, y'all best dialing. I'm forever blowing bubbles, I'm forever blowing bubbles, I'm forever blowing bubbles, I'm forever blowing bubbles, said I'm forever blowing bubbles, and my fortune's always hiding. It's the American West Ham Podcast, y'all best dialing. I'm forever blowing bubbles, I'm forever blowing bubbles, I'm forever blowing bubbles, I'm forever blowing bubbles, hey.
Big games, big moments, big rewards. Absolutely. And huge disappointment. All season, promotion demanded by West Ham. On a sunny afternoon in May at Wembley, promotion to the Premier League has been delivered. Ricardo Bassey, one of the January arrivals, with the biggest goal he will have ever scored. And West Ham, Wembley winners again for the first time since 1980. But more significantly, back in the Premier League.